This man changed the world.
Allahu Akbar, Khomeini Rahbar. Allahu Akbar, Khomeini Rahbar.
Our bosses couldn't cope with the idea of an 80-year-old Ayatollah, which they didn't even know what an Ayatollah was, who lived on garlic and onions and yogurt, directing a revolution that was about to topple America's most important ally.
شما در این قرن معجزه کردید. ملت ایران ملت معجزه آسای قرن است.
الله اکبر. خمینی رهبر. الله اکبر. خمینی رهبر.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of Allah, the Exalted, the Most Compassionate, the Most Merciful. Salam, hello and welcome to our audience and a warm welcome to our listeners of our program, The Man Who Changed the World. This is a program dedicated to the beloved memory of Imam Khomeini. May God bless his great soul. And once again, I have my good friend, Dr. Mahdi Tarabi, an academic and Islamic scholar, on the program to discuss polarization. Salam, sir.
Alaykum salam rahmatullah. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim.
Thank you. Dr. Mahdi Tarabi, Imam Khomeini and the theme that we've been explaining in the last few sessions has been polarization. We started, of course, with Imam Ali alayhi salam and describing the fact that, you know, we can't be wishy-washy with the enemies of Islam. And, you know, as you say, that we you know, for the sake of scholarship, it's good to quote the Holy Quran and say that, you know, there's a verse in the Quran that says that you should be hard against the unbeliever and compassionate amongst yourselves. So I leave the floor entirely to you, sir.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. I think this is an important theme. This is why we're spending a little bit more time on this.
Of course.
And as you said, we started with Eid al-Qadir, which is the aid of Walayat.
That's right.
And where we talked about Imam Ali alayhi salam, and this very wonderful, excellent, small, short book written by Shahid Motahhari.
That's right,
about the polarization within the personality of Imam Hussein, that he was a person that really attracted people and also repelled
people, yes.
And that we have, unfortunately, and there's many reasons for this, this false notion that somebody who is, you know, religious, holy, connected to God is somebody who, you know, is just always smiling and, you know, trying to be friendly with everyone, and it doesn't stand up maybe to those people who are, you know, oppressors, sinners.
Of course.
People who do injustice. And the beautiful thing that we see in the personality of Imam Ali,
Imam Ali, yes, of course, yes,
is that he isn't like that.
No.
He really doesn't tolerate.
Even for one iota.
Right. Things that are going to not be according to Allah's will.
Allah's will and Allah's law.
And this goes to the closest people around him as well. This is not simply a thing.
No, no.
And we said that this is the real personality of a holy person.
Exactly.
And that when we see in our times a personality like that, it is somebody like Imam Khomeini.
Exactly. Exactly.
And this is why he was so effective and awesome popular, and, you know, popular not in the general sense, but he was somebody who really drew the line.
Yes. And that's why we loved him.
And that's why we loved him. Because he didn't try to be wishy-washy.
No. He had red lines, and he said, no, you can't cross this.
Right. And the deeper point in this is that unfortunately, in Eastern culture, in the culture that developed in the Muslim world, the main enemy is nifaq.
Exactly.
It's not even open kufr.
It's nifaq.
It's people who, you know, have the appearance of Islam, but in their hearts are after different things.
After different things.
Or they like one part of Islam, but they also like, you know, things that are not in Islam. They like to pray behind Ali alayhi salam, but they like to eat at Muawiyah's.
Ah, it reminds me of another character.
Yes, you know what I'm talking about?
Yes, Abu Huraira, who said this quite openly in his book. He did say that if I wanted the spiritual mirage of the moment, I would pray behind Imam Ali alayhi salam. But if I want the world, then I would have the gold of Muawiyah.
Right. And the point is, you can't have them both.
No, you can't. No.
You can't have it.
No, that's ridiculous.
Once you take Maui...
That is insanity. That's ludicrous.
The point is, once you take Maui's gold...
Gold.
You're not going to go up to Meraz.
You're not going to go. That's right.
Even if you pray, you know, the whole night behind the Mamali.
No, it's cancelled.
It's not going to get you
anywhere. Yes, it's not going to get you anywhere.
Right. So this is the problem that we have is in Muslim societies is that we have nifaq. We have people who understand that they can't openly come out and say anything against Islam. And I don't mean Islam as a historical matter. I'm talking about the wisdom, the rules, the basic beliefs.
Quite.
Okay? They know that they can't do that because they would be socially shunned. They would be ostracized. And so they keep it in themselves. And you have this nifaq, which, again, I want to translate this hypocrisy, this fakeness, this falseness. This, you know, two-facedness, whatever you want to call it.
It's a disease.
It's a disease.
It's a disease of the soul.
Right. And the most effective people that fight this are the people that have this personality of Imam Ali alayhi salam, which, you know, they recognize it and they fight it.
They fight it.
Immediately, without any...
hesitation.
Right. Which, again, a prime example of that in our times is Imam Khomeini.
Yes.
We have examples of this. And we've in the series, we've talked about some of the examples before the revolution, during the revolution, beginning of the revolution, some of the problems that we had, some of the challenges that we had. I would like to point out to another one, which is more related to this issue, which is that after the revolution, the issue, the main issue, one of the basic reasons why there was even a revolution is the fact that, you know, we wanted Islamic law to be implemented.
That's right.
Okay.
That's right.
We want Sharia to be implemented as the laws of the land.
That's why you were called an Islamic republic.
Right. You can't have an Islamic society and an Islamic state if Sharia is not implemented.
Not implemented.
Now, this is a gradual process. This is a process that it's not, you know, it doesn't happen overnight. But the basic issue is this.
Sure.
This is what distinguishes an Islamic order from a non-Islamic order.
Exactly.
Okay, is Islamic laws, is ahkam, is the
rules
in the Quran and in the Rivayat as, you know, derived by the mujtahid, by the legal scholars in our time.
Yes.
Which is the Jafari school. This is our view, is that you have living mujtahids. You don't follow a mujtahid from 1,000 years ago or 500 years ago.
No, you follow a living mujtahid.
You follow a living mujtahid who every generation looks at the Quran, looks at the Rabayat, looks at what he has, uses his aql. Aql is one of the
prerequisites.
One of the things we use in Jafari fiqh.
Yes.
In terms of getting to, we even use aql to understand the Rivayat.
Exactly,
and the Quran.
Because
it's
have the concept.
It's not that aql is, you know, opposed to the Rivayat.
No, it's not. Because this rationalization is part of the methodology of this ijtihad, isn't it?
It's part of human nature.
It's part of human nature.
This is the way you figure out things.
Well,
this
God tells you to think.
Exactly. This is the way humans figure out stuff.
Exactly.
They use their
this
logic.
Is where humans figure out stuff.
This is why we insist on having aql and rationalism in the Ahlul Bayt school, which some of the other schools, unfortunately.
No.
Have abandoned.
Because this is why logic is so part and parcel of the studies of
exactly.
this process.
Exactly.
Yes.
So.
Mantik, yes.
One of the things that happened after the revolution, which is what one of the main reasons that we even had the revolution, was to actually start implementing Islamic law.
Yes.
Now, this is where you can tell who is a munafiq and who isn't.
Quite.
Okay.
Very good.
This is the Excellent. This is the dividing line.
This is the dividing line. Yes, absolutely.
Okay. A lot of people, when it doesn't, when you're not, you know, when the rubber doesn't hit the road, when, you know, whatever you want to call it, you know, hey, it's hey, we all love God, we all love the prophet.
Yes,
you know?
Yes.
Okay, now let's live according to the rules.
Yes, yes. And then suddenly,
you're like, hey, wait a second.
Wait a second. Yeah.
Million excuses. 1,000 different, you know.
Well, I mean, this is why the Holy Prophet Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam had such a hard time in Medina. I mean, come on. 23 years was not just about revealing the Holy Quran. It was about, you know, this implementation. And when it came to the implementation, we had all sorts of things happening.
Well, all I'm trying to say is that there were many people who, you know, obviously, you know, they don't deny God. They don't deny prophethood.
I mean,
they don't
nobody
deny
denies
religion.
God. I mean, this is...
Okay?
Yeah.
Who, when time came to live according to those rules...
Yes.
Suddenly, hey...
There were problems.
There were problems. One example was that you had a certain group which you know, had the appearance of Islam, which was, you know, freedom movement and, you know, religious, you know, movements and people who went to prayers and who fasted and all that. And then when Imam talked about implementing, you know, hudud and qisas, those punishments, those physical punishments that are part of Islamic law, which I will get to in a moment.
Please.
About why that's actually more civilized.
Yes.
Than sticking somebody in prison for no reason for years. Mm-hmm. Okay? Mm. When that issue came up, you had so-called, you know, people who really thought they were Muslims saying, well, this goes against the Charter of the Human Rights, the UN Charter of Human Rights.
Yeah. Interesting. Interesting.
So what did Imam say? Mm. But this is when we're talking about the personality who is able to distinguish and who's able to, you know, deal with the nifaq, which is one of the main features of Islamic society.
Sure.
What did he say? He said, anybody who denies Islamic ahkam is a kafir.
There you have it.
Right.
There you have it.
Now, you might say, well, isn't that harsh? Isn't that
I don't think that's
well,
harsh.
I'm saying people say that. They
yes,
say, oh,
yeah,
no, isn't that, don't you want to, you know...
Well, if you're a believer, you know, I mean...
Well, this is the point. There are certain... You know, we always talk about red lines, right?
Yes.
You know, the whole, we're always talking about Iran's red lines and the West's red
yeah,
lines.
But yes, right? We do.
Isn't life about red lines?
It is. I think so,
right?
Very much so.
So this is a red line.
This is a red line.
This is what distinguishes somebody who truly wants to follow the
Islam.
Prophet and the Quran.
Quran, yes.
And Islam as it's revealed,
mm-hmm.
not as I desire it to be.
Mm-hmm.
I'm including myself in this.
Of course,
don't
we are.
Think,
we,
you know, we're holier. We're not holier than thou.
No. We're not more Catholic than the Pope.
Right.
Right.
Each one of us, all of us, have things that they, their nafs, their inner, you know, animal self.
Yes.
Will be like, no, that's not good. That's not. You know, why did God say that? And this is where you have to do jihad and nafs.
Exactly.
That's why it's called jihad
point.
And nafs.
That's
it's
the not, whole point. This is the jihad akbar that the Holy Prophet was
not,
talking about.
It's not
about.
The vacation of the nafs,
no.
Right? It's jihad and nafs, right?
Of course. This is the discipline that we require.
Right. So there might be parts and obligations that I have as a Muslim, which are going to be a little bit difficult on me. But they're good for me. It says in the Quran a couple places, there might be things that, you know.
Yes, of course, that you're not happy with, that you will not like. But there's khair in it. There is but.
Okay, I'll give you an example.
Please.
I'll give you an example for the
listeners.
For
yes,
the men.
For the men. For the men, yes.
In Islam, a man is legally obligated to take care of the expenses of his family.
Exactly.
His wife does not have to go work.
No.
She can if she wants to.
No, but that's a volunteer thing, isn't
right.
it?
But you as a husband.
You are wajib.
As a father.
Compulsory.
You have to make jihad.
You have to make jihad.
On a daily
and
basis.
It is called jihad in
and
Rivaya.
It is a jihad.
It is called jihad. The word is used
it
like
is
that.
It is a jihad.
Yeah.
Okay, so don't think it's not a jihad.
No, in Bihar al-Anwar, it is used
to
like that.
To get halal income for your family.
Exactly. Exactly.
Now, we all know that, you know, some people, it's hard for them. They don't like it. They would rather stay home. They would rather go out with their friends. They would rather, you know, live in the mosque the whole day, right?
But
that's
not what Allah wants from you.
Look, I gave the example of the mosque. Now, not to think that we're talking about people who are bad people.
No.
Somebody who is very religious and says, you know what, I would rather just pray. That's not what Allah wants from you. If you have a wife, if you have children, you have to take care of them. It's wajib. And it might be hard for you.
This was exactly the issue which, you know, this term Sufi came about. You know, because, you know, Imam Ali alayhi salam saw somebody doing like that because he was trying to imitate Imam Ali because he was doing almost like 1,000 rak'ah per day. That's nice. But Imam Ali said, that's my job. But your job is to go out and work and feed your family.
Right.
That is part of your worship, part of your ibadah. You do the things according to the way the Sharia is.
You know, you said there's the wajib. Prayers.
There's the wajib. Yes.
If you can do the mustahab ones as well,
that's
great.
Great, but that's...
That's mustahab.
That's mustahab, but your main...
Don't let the mustahab get in the way of the wajib.
Thank you.
Okay? Because we always...
That's exactly what I was trying to say.
Exactly, because there's a problem with a lot of people. They have a problem. They don't understand this, Ravayat. They think it's...
it actually means don't let the mustahab ibadat get in the way of your wajib duties. Okay? It's not that, you know, don't pray the mustahab prayers.
When you have time, you can do that.
Right, when you have time. So you do all the wajib stuff during the day, which the main one being you take care of your family.
Family, yes. Okay. Yes.
And it's not only the financial, it's also being the wali, being the guide, being the one that, that keeps the family together. So it's not just about, you know, being a, you know, money-producing robot, which unfortunately has become the case.
It has become the case. It is more, you know, as you quite right. But this is part of our worship. This is the other thing. This is not something separate that,
I would just like, the whole, the reason we went on this tangent was because, you know, there are certain things. You know, it's very, you fall into nifaq very easily.
That's
where
true.
You look at something and you're like, well, I'm sure these guys at that time who, you know, like I said, they prayed, they fasted, you know, they didn't deny God, they didn't deny the Prophet, they didn't deny Imam Ali alayhi salam, they didn't deny Imam Hussein. They're thinking, well, isn't it better for us if we don't do this now, if we don't have qisas and hudud? You know, maybe the Americans won't be so upset at us. Maybe the United Nations will, you know, pat us on the back and tell us, you're good boys. You know, we accept your revolution. Okay?
I mean, I think we have
this is where leadership is important.
Exactly. This is what I was going to get to. What is the leadership for then Islam?
So Imam Khomeini just comes out and he's, you know how you remember.
Yeah, I know. I remember
comes
that.
On,
this is
got
why
the
I love
speech.
Him.
He goes, anybody who denies Islamic qisas hudud is a kafir.
Is a kafir. Thank you.
Case.
Thank you, sir.
Closed.
Case closed. That's right.
Case closed.
Closed. Finish.
Okay. Now, obviously, this is going to repel some people.
Of course it is.
This is in the nature of things.
In the nature of things. Yeah.
Just as
it happened in Imam Ali's time.
Just as it happened with Imam Ali alayhi salam.
Exactly.
So we see Imam Khomeini, peace be upon him, who at this very, very important and
critical
sensitive
juncture,
and critical juncture, and let me say this, and you know, you might be amazed, in human history.
Yes.
It wasn't simply Iranian history, Islamic
history. No, it's nothing to do with
you
that.
You know, because we talked about how this revolution was unique in human history. Okay. It was unique in human. Somebody has said, I mean, I don't completely agree with this, but this is an interesting way of putting it. He says, a traditional scholar in the modern world creating a postmodern revolution. Okay?
So,
at this critical juncture in human history where you have a nation awakening, the Iranian nation, you know, hoisting the banner of Islam after all those decades and centuries
that have gone past,
right? This is the kind of man you need. We talked about the things that happened during the revolution, you know, with the different threats that were said to him, you know, the different political games that were being played to get him to go to Qom and just be quiet.
Yes,
and
of course.
Let so-and-so take over and let this person do. So we get to the internal affairs. Internal affairs, like we said, it has to do with dealing with nifaq. The people that are saying these things to you, you know, on the surface of it, these are Muslims. They pray.
They
cry for Imam Hussein.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
They're not bad people. Because we always talk about, they're good people.
No.
it's everybody's good, obviously.
Obviously.
Right?
Yes.
The point is, to what extent do you really want to implement Islam?
Ah, this is the real question.
Right?
This is the real question.
As somebody said, as one of the scholars said in one of the speeches, this was very nice. He said, you know, we have three kinds of people. And this is based on the Revayat from Ahlul Bayt.
Yes, it is. I'm aware of this.
Right?
Yes. Mm.
This is based on the Revayat from Ahlul Bayt.
Right, yes.
He said, we have those who are our enemies. Those for whom I'm giving you the interpretation
of
it.
Yes.
It's not those, the direct.
Yes.
It's not the, those who love us but also have other affairs.
Those who love us and have other affairs. Yes.
And then those whose affair is their life.
Our affair is their.
Our program. Our
everything is their life.
Their life is to implement. You know this Islam. So this is the kind of, and you know, obviously we're talking about being the last type of person. We're not even talking about two people who are the enemies.
No.
The enemies, it's clear what the enemies are. Mm. We're not talking about that.
No.
We're talking about how do you deal with those who love Ahlul Bayt.
Yes,
It's the old Kufian story.
Kufian story,
it's the old
exactly.
people, hey, this you know, what, we love you, but we can't come with you to the battle.
We can't come with you to Karbala.
Right. We've got other things.
Yes. I mean, like one companion was asked, to come with Imam Hussein. He said, no. You can take my horse and my sword and this and that. And Imam said, I don't want your horse and your thing.
I don't want that. I want you. I want you to go to heaven, right?
Yes.
So, again, we're not saying we would pass this test.
No, we're not saying we're not going to pass
miserably. We're not trying to say that we're holier than anyone.
No.
But this is why it's important to have leaders and people like Imam Khomeini.
Yes.
Because in those critical junctures, in those moments where, hey, suddenly Shaitan is, you know.
Yes, this is where he...
attacking you from various sides.
This is where he does
his job. Making bad things look good.
Good.
Because, you know, remember, the way Shaitan fools Mu'min people who are religious, is with religion.
With religion, yes.
With things they like. Mm. I'll give you a very small example.
Please.
We like to pray on time, mm-hmm. correct? Mm-hmm. And then we're sitting in the mosque, mm-hmm. and the prayer leader, for some reason, is a bit late. Mm-hmm. Maybe he got stuck in traffic.
Yes.
Maybe somebody's asking him a question. Mm-hmm. And we get all excited. We get all angry. Oh, my God, what is this? Mm-hmm. And then we ruin our prayer. Right? We're not.
Absolutely.
Right? Yeah. And the reason
is... How many times is that?
The reason why is because you know, we like prayer on time, and Shaitan knows, okay, so I'm going to make him feel bad about... I'm going to do something that with this very notion, his prayer is going to be for me, not for Allah.
Yes.
Or, you know, people who are very sensitive about tahara, you know, about being...
Yeah, yeah.
Mm. And they just keep... And you're like, dude, just it's Pak. Just go pray. You know.
I mean, even Imam Ali alayhi salam used to throw water on his clothes just so there's no shak.
Right. And that's the point. The point is, you know, Shaitan enters and makes you ruin the beautiful things that you're with, so things you like, with things that are important to you. It's your children, you know, the wealth you've worked for all your life.
Yes.
And this goes back to Zuhair ibn al-Ghain, you know.
Yes, exactly.
This you know, who was the big, prominent, you know, fat cat businessman, mm-hmm. Uthmani, you know, very close with the Uthmani administration. Sure. Very wealthy, very prominent, and you know they're traveling on the same route.
Yes, yes,
and he's constantly trying to
avoid Imam Hussein's camp.
And then finally, a messenger comes and says, "Look, you know, Prophet's son wants to see you."
See you.
He's like, "Well, I don't know." And his wife's like, "Listen,
you don't lose opportunities. Right,
the
like
Prophet's
this.
Son wants to see,
see you.
You better go."
Yeah,
and he goes, and he gives away everything. He gives away all his wealth.
Yeah,
everything. He says, "You know what? That's it." So you know. This is the Shaitan, you know, is waswasing him, is saying, look, you've got all this wealth, you've got status, you've got these wives, you've got this, you know.
There's a lot to lose.
You're this big shot.
Yeah, you
know,
the big shot.
You're considered, you know, sheikh among the Arabs. Mm. You know, these are things that people like.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and these are things in society that help him. And actually, you know, they help his children having wealth and having, you know.
Sure.
And what happens? In the end, Shaitan loses.
Alhamdulillah.
Alhamdulillah, because he had something, he had a purity in his
heart. He had a purity in his heart. Okay. He was the one who came up with the best and line, you know, with Imam Hussain.
Exactly. And you know what he said? This is in Kitab al-Arshad. He said, and they asked him, they said, so what made you do it? He said, I remember that we were fighting with Salman, with the Prophet. We were fighting in the battle with the, you know, under the banner of the Prophet. And Salman told me that one day the Ibn Rasulullah, the son of the Rasul, will ask you to help him and fight with him, and you will. He said, I remembered that. And this is how many decades before that, right?
Yes, that's right.
So there was that purity which he had in his youth when he followed the Prophet and he fought with the Prophet. And so when the time came as an old man, after Allah had given him all these things,
yes.
It didn't become a hijab for him. It didn't become a way for him to go to hell. It became a way for him to go to heaven. And the beautiful thing is his wife... Because he comes back to her and he says, you know, I divorce you.
I divorce you, yes.
You can go.
Yes.
And she, you know what she says? She says, I was the one that told you to go. So, you know, the point is that wishy-washiness, gray area, you know, we might think that we're being very, you know, smart when we do these things.
Yeah.
We might think that we're being very, you know, sly and you know.
But I just pray that God gives us an opportunity to be like Zuhair.
Right. And I think this is a problem, especially in the Muslim societies. We think that being this kind of like playing both sides and, you know, trying to speak out of both sides of our mouth, that this is some sort of politics or this is some sort of...
In Scotland, we say we speak out of both of our cheeks.
Right. Right. So, and yet we see that this is not the case.
No.
There are times when it comes where you have to take a stand. Mm-hmm. And say things the way they are,
yes.
And And, you know, if people are going to curse you for it, they will curse you for it. Of course. But Allah is praising you for it.
Of course he will.
And Imam Khomeini was a person like that.
Yes.
He taught us that. We saw it on a daily basis when there was war, when there was revolution, when there was pressure. Again, I remind the people of when, you know, Shevardnadze came as the foreign minister of the Soviet Union.
Oh, the Soviet Union,
you know, everybody telling Imam, you know, you got to wink at him and you got to, you know, be nice to him and maybe the Soviets can help us during the war. And, you know, we're under pressure. Didn't put on his turban, came out with pajamas, didn't even say hi to him, and basically told him that your system is going to, you know, go to hell
in a handbasket. Yes.
And then he just got up in the middle of Shevardnadze's speech and said, I'm going to bed.
I'm going to bed.
Right? Why? Because Shevardnadze was a communist, was a person who was killing Afghans at that time, the army, the Soviet.
Yeah, Muslims, yes.
So that's it. And Allah made us win and they lost.
Exactly. Thank you, Dr. Mahdi Tarabi, on that note. And it just leaves me to thank our listeners, and I hope they benefited from what we've said today. And it just leaves me to say, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. May the peace and mercy and blessings of Allah be upon you all. Thank you for listening, and goodbye.